You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to Beyond the Game. My name is Gregan, and today I'm chatting with Don Jake, known for his crazy League of Legends interviews and org, Ruddy Corp.
I'm like Macbeth in a way, really.
So who are you? Where did
you
come
from? Well, I was a Caesarian, was my point.
Well, I was more talking about in an esports sense, but I'm glad you went straight back to the beginning. I think every org's wet dream is to be the most spoken about thing in League of Legends. How did you guys go about doing that?
Esports is in its infancy stage from a creative perspective, so a lot of stuff verges on a non-expansive principle of creative process.
Has esports become soulless?
Don't come to asking this because I'm sort of quite new. I don't care. Like, without being rude, I don't really care what anyone else does or like how much soul they put into it, because for me, art is finality. To make things is my direction. It's all I'll ever do.
The way people perceive you online, has that ever affected you?
I'm just a silly little guy, really. Does his own thing.
Like, but do people look at you as a silly little guy?
No, 100%. I feel like, I don't know, it's weird. Like, a lot of the time, I find that people will speak to me and then either, like, they don't admit this, but I can tell it, or, like, they directly say it. They'll be like, oh, you're, like, actually, you have a brain. I thought you were, like, completely stupid.
Make sure to follow for future episodes. And let us know who you want to hear from next. I hope you enjoy this conversation as we get to know Jake beyond the game. Don Jake. Feels weird calling you Don Jake.
Yeah.
Jake, how you doing?
Funny thing about that is really that a lot of people, they know that my name's Don Jake, and then they have the audacity to ask me whether my first name is Don or Jake.
Wow.
Which, you know, of the two for a selection is
pretty,
really
quite obvious.
I would assume quite a linear task.
Yeah, well, Mr. Make It Happen.
Mr. Adversely Affect the Temperature, I've been known as well.
Well, speaking of temperature, it's quite warm today.
Yeah.
May I ask about your attire that you've gone for?
Well, for me, you know, I had a prompt today. I watched The Devils Wear Prada a few days ago, and I just thought, esports, but make it to be honest with you.
Okay. Well, you're more than welcome to take it off whenever you're ready, because it is rather warm.
I'll take the shades off so we can look each other in the eye.
But yeah, yeah. I was really a bit intimidated there.
Well, you know.
But you've had a bit of recent success with your interviews at MSI. You know, they blew up massively. I thoroughly enjoyed watching those interviews. Very unique within the esports space. I guess there's a lot of people who don't know who you are who've just recently found out about you. So who are you and where did you come from?
So I think it's a difficult question, isn't it? We get into the etymology of man. I sort of was born... I'm like Macbeth in a way, really, because, you know, if you're familiar with the story of Macbeth, it's actually not a good thing to talk about because there's a whole curse behind it. But the whole thing about him was his undoing was when he got a prophecy from the three witches, and they were like, you cannot be killed by a man that was born from a woman. And he was like, no man on earth can kill me then. But then he got killed by a guy that was a Caesarian. It's cut from a woman's stomach. He wasn't born from a woman.
Nuance of words. So who are you? Where did you
come
from?
Well, I was a Caesarian, was my point.
I
wasn't born from a woman.
Well, so. I was more talking about in an esports sense, but I'm glad you went straight back to the beginning.
Yeah, well, I think the beginning is important.
It is.
For real.
So we'll go along that whole journey through gaming.
Yeah.
And then at the end of it, esports arrived.
Yeah.
League of Legends.
For sure.
You sort of bounced about. You're a caster?
So, I mean, I started, did you say what I've done in esports or like...
Just who are you?
Who am I? I don't know. I started playing League in like maybe 2013 because a bunch of my Danish friends that played League of Legends like offered to help me play because I played Minecraft primarily. I was one of those little bad kids, drop hacking people and sending them IP resolvers on Skype when I was like 13.
Okay.
One of those little sheds. And then they all convinced me to go and play League. I played on EU Nordic East, which is like the forgotten, it's like the, how do I say this? It's like the, Eastern Europe of League of Legends servers. It's not a great server.
Just forgotten?
Just forgotten. Like, it's like Metro 2033 Redux. Like, it's like a very interesting place to be. I played League for a few years, kind of just like played pretty religiously, but like not doing anything with it, just like with friends. And then I met like people from like the actual UK scene somehow by complete chance. And then like I got more into like, met people like Jamada. Jamada was like my first contact. You guys will know him from LEC, the guy that everyone in chat says looks like James Harden. Kind of does, to be fair. But yeah, he like kind of was like an example of someone that like sounded like me, was like from the same place because we're both from like London. But kind of talk like when I'm not doing my professional voice, we both kind of sound similar. And he was like, yeah, I did. He's like, did casting. So I got a little bit more into casting. I worked my way up. I did a little bit of stuff with Goolborg in the English recast of the French league. And I did a bit of NLC. I went and flew out to Berlin and I did that. It was like personality stuff. And then at some point during that, synonymously with that, analogously, we started an org with two of my friends that I knew, Regan and Harry, the two other co-owners of Ruddy Esports, the company that I run, the esports team that I run. And then, yeah, we just sort of just did an org. It initially started as like, we like would play in charity tournaments and we needed a team. So we just like made, we would always say to each other, like, it was like this weird joke that we had in joke where it was like, we would always say like, oh, ruddy hell, don't ruddy say that. Mm-hmm. It's like a way of like, you know, when your grandparents like say, don't say bloody. And then you have all these like euphemistic like frick, like stuff like this, fricking. So that was our way of like,
golly gosh.
Yeah, golly. Yeah, exactly. But it's like the idea that like, I don't know, we always for some reason like subconsciously had this thing of like, it was just funny the backgrounds that we came from, the way that we spoke, that we all were just like nerding out on League of Legends.
Uh-huh.
So like there was an element of like, we were almost being blasphemic in our presence, like we didn't belong there. So like that is where ruddy, the word ruddy came from. It was a very much like a blasphemic espousal of like, we don't belong here, but it's like funny that we're here. So that's how it started. We just played for like charity tournaments. And then after a while, we were just like, let's make an actual org, because we were like, all the other UK ones in the UK for League are like really shit and we don't really like anything they do. So let's just like do it our own way. And it's been like a year now.
I was going to say, it was pretty much a year ago today that you guys formed, and you've had an interesting journey
for sure.
Where you've been playing in what is one of the most, it feels controversial leagues within League of Legends from what I see on social. You're right there.
Yeah, wrong way, mate.
Wrong way. Went down the ruddy wrong hole there.
Wrong way down a one way.
Yeah.
So controversial leagues.
I always see people complaining about the UK League of Legends and like the fact that they combined UK League with the Nordics.
Yeah.
What's your view on that whole thing?
Oh, it's horrible, mate. It's like the most difficult, draining, soul-crushing, destroying thing ever. Because it's like, I don't know, it's weird. Like not, I'm kind of like a new gen spawn on the block for UK League of Legends, because it's been a thing for like multiple years. It's gone through like multiple hands. It's been like it's been with LVP, it's been with DreamHack, it's been with fucking every Tom, Dick and Harry that's ever owned being a tournament organizer. So I think everyone's just like, it's just like, imagine living in a town that gets nuked like every 2.5 years. It's just
I'd rather not think
it's
about
just
that.
Like, it's just like there's not really a lot of hope. It's just like a lot of people in UK League of Legends are just like these little mole guys that like are underground, and they come out and they're like, oh, still nuked. Nice. There's just not a lot of hope. So I think, I don't know, when I came into the scene, I was like, I'm slowly but surely, like the life and hope is getting like sucked out of me, like limb from limb. It's a very vampiric blood sport being in UK League of Legends. But I mean, we're hopeful. We have a lot of fun. You know, we're quite youthful.
So you said about having a lot of fun.
I have a skincare routine. You know, I'm still fine.
Like, still young. You're quite young. You're, what, 23 now?
23, yeah.
Yeah, and
feels weird to say.
You're coming into the League of Legends space and trying to switch things up. And you've been described in lots of ways by the people who like you. It's like mavericks, you know, pranksters.
Yeah.
You know, doing things differently, mixing it up.
Yeah.
The other side, people can be quite rude about you guys because they don't like your personality, whatever it is. But one thing's for sure, there's a lot of people forming opinions about you, which is, I think, every org's wet dream is to be the most spoken about thing in League of Legends. How did you guys go about doing that?
Well, I think in general, just like content in esports is really bad because, like, not everyone, there's like, bro, I feel like that's going to get clipped off and then there's just going to be loads. There's going to be like some like French creative that works for some big org in like Lombardy somewhere that's just like, no, I make the best stuff ever. Like, I'm sure you do, Francois. But a lot of the content I see in esports, like, there are some gold standard examples, but by the by, on average, and this is like particularly speaking to League of Legends as well, it's just like very bad. because there is an obsession with esports is in its infancy stage from a creative perspective. So a lot of stuff verges on a non-expansive principle of creative process, because traditionally, like if you talk about great filmmakers, all of these people, what they do is they compend and build upon initial references and then you create a structure from that. So like, for example, like someone like Martin Scorsese, I remember he broke down like the initial scene, one of the initial scenes in Taxi Driver. It's that nice long sequence where they stop at the traffic lights as well. And he's like, okay, I was inspired by this film for this scene. This is a reference to this. And he breaks down 10 things in a row and you suddenly realize that, oh, like, there is a great degree of creativity in these people, but a lot of the time it's just from their study. Like they study, they understand things, so they're able to build references. And it's like referential work for me at a top creative level. Like you look at like someone like Alexander McQueen, you look at someone like Martin Scorsese, you look at Stanley Kubrick, a lot of these guys, like it's like the ability to build prestige from oral, audio, like loads of things. And you basically create a new exoskeleton, a nerve system from stuff that shouldn't fit together. That is the true talent, to be able to do that from stuff that shouldn't work together, but it does. I can't see the line work, so to speak, or the stitching in the hem.
This was something I was listening to a podcast about AI, and a lot of people see AI and they're like, well, it's not, they don't think the way we think. They learn through repeated failure.
Yeah.
And they have millions of attempts and eventually they find out how to do things.
Yeah.
And it's in particular around creative stuff. They go, oh, you know, they can't ever replicate the creative ingenuity of
Well, it's interesting because like, isn't the main issue with AI at the moment when you look at the stuff that they can't like do hands and stuff like this, which is always said to be like the, you think of the famous like MC Escher thing of like the hands drawing the hands, right? It's like just it's a very metaphorically difficult thing to do, right?
Yeah, and eventually they'll learn it by looking at lots of other hands, which is what you're describing. The way AI learns is the same way we learn, which is we look at everything that's out there and eventually form our own way of reproducing that into something different.
Yeah, for sure.
And that's what you're saying there. Within esports, we've had such little time to be able to look back at other people's work, combine it together and create our own new things.
Yeah, it's an infancy problem, but I don't think it's necessarily like, it's just a problem in general with the approach, to be honest, because it's tricky, right? I think there are a lot of non-specialized people in esports that don't necessarily come from traditional creative backgrounds. And like a lot of people that want to do traditional, like be creative pushers, like esports wouldn't be the place they go. Like you would just be doing something else, right? Like,
yeah, that's true.
But the problem is in esports in general, it's a problem not even just for creativity, just in general. There's a lot of non-specialized roles. Like people are just here because they're here. There's not a lot of people that like in our league, one of the problems we have, and I don't know, the owners from my league are going to watch this and be annoyed. We've got a little group chat. But like, for example, there's one owner that's really, I really enjoy talking to him and I think he's really useful because he has like, he started an org after like having 10 years of like directing roles and like marketing roles at like Premier League football clubs, and now he's gone into esports. So like he's useful because he's like actually understands, like he has practical outside thing and the heat stuff he can bring to esports, whereas a lot of people in esports is like, you did an esports degree, shout out to your cameraman,
and to my cameraman
not kept, well, you know,
it's more than a cameraman,
technical operator. That's very patronizing, I apologize.
Yeah, geez.
But like there's a lot of people that like just did esports, like not even just did esports, but like just in the scene, and you learn from the scene, so it's like you don't have anything to bring from outside. And that's not like a problem necessarily, because there's a lot of people that will just do the work, right? And just learn it. But my general point is, we talk about creative process. There's a real issue with a lot of the content I see of a urgence or a leaning on parody, direct parody, which is like the difference. Referential work is you take initial stimulus, build, compound, and then build new exoskeleton. What we do in esports a lot of the time, 90% of the time, the true people at the top of their field at the moment, which there are examples that like, I can name, but I don't like giving credit to people.
We were talking a bit before about previous guest Danny, who someone I believe is one of the best creatives in the space, and it's because he came from a creative background. He did study for this. He did so well with this. And another is Ian Chambers, who's our first guest. He studied how to be a broadcaster. He did radio. He studied being on camera.
Exactly.
So he came in with very little esports experience, but came straight in and was instantly one of the best at his job, and is now taking that even further with his knowledge of esports.
Yeah.
And what you're describing is there's a lot of people coming into roles within esports, even pro players, right? A lot of pro players have very little experience of what it takes to be a pro player, like the level of dedication it takes. And a lot of them fall into those roles very quickly. And the parody thing is very true, where rather than creating their own process to do things, they are replicating what someone else does or someone else has told them to do, without actually any kind of understanding of it.
Yeah, for sure. I don't know, like a lot of the content I see, it's just like, it would just be like, I don't know, like it would be like, we've done a roster announcement video and our whole campaign for this is based on like the Joker.
Mm.
And it's like, oh, we're in an asylum and there's a bathroom and there's blood on the mirror and like this guy's got this makeup on. It's just like, you haven't really done anything there. You've just kind of directly referenced something. And then people are like, oh, wow, that's that. But it doesn't really push any boundaries or like isn't, I don't know.
It's
very low effort, but I can understand it because it like appeases fans. And if you do it with enough production quality, it's fine.
Yeah.
But the problem is not everyone has that production quality, but everyone attempts to do it anyway. So you end up just a lot.
It's interesting you described that because what you described there is creative for the sake of creative, right? Like that whole thing you described there wouldn't make sense in the context of the team. But then with Danny, for example, one of my favorite content PC ever did was when we announced our Valorant roster at Guild, which was a full Swedish team.
Yeah.
We did this whole Vikings on a boat piece where they then hated the fact they're doing it. And they said, we're gamers. Why are you making us do this stupid stuff? Let's just roll the montage. Why are we not just doing the montage and that kind of thing? And that had meaning to it. It was done well. It was produced well. It was almost parodying the lack of creativity within the space.
Yeah, for sure.
And that's where the deeper creativity comes in with the people who are actually good at it rather than someone just going, I've got an idea, let's do it. And not sort of like fleshing it out into a reasonable piece that makes sense.
Yeah, no, 100% agree with that. Like, I don't know. It's just it's an infancy issue. And I think this is a lot of, it's like I said, like it's a specialization thing. I think things will move in that direction. And there's good examples, right? Like I think a really example that doesn't necessarily, it fits to what I'm saying, but not in a way that I think a lot of people would jump to immediately. I think BDS and the LAC does a really good job of this at the moment.
Mm.
I think how, for us, a lot of what we do is attempting to build concepts in spaces that people don't think concepts should belong.
Mm.
So one of the initial things we did in our NLC season is that we realized that the post-game interview is a criminally underutilized things by any team.
Mm.
So immediately we were like, no one actually cares about listening. Like the stream has 3K viewers, maybe 2K viewers. No one cares about listening to you how you thought the game went. We just watched the game. Like you were in the game. Like I just watched it. So we just started like, the first one we did was like Regan, because Regan, the guy I run it with, is in America. Like he was in a pool in America. He did the interview from there, like had his feet up, like on a sunbed. And then like he just like talked over the guys asking him questions, like just very rude, like CEO persona. And then like we were playing Domino next week. There's a team called Domino in the league and he just held up a Domino box. He's like, we're coming for you next week. And he just jumped into a pool and like the camera followed him. And then like a couple weeks after that, I had like my 9-year-old brother did an interview. Like they were expecting it to be me and he just turned up on camera. And he just insulted all the casters. And then like a couple weeks after that, I dressed up in a full disco costume. They're expecting me to interview. And I just do like a full Michael Jackson breakdown with like strobe lights and everything. And it's just like, just stuff like that. Then people are actually like interested in watching our stuff. Like it's not like complicated and I'm not like patting myself on the back for it, but it's like, we realized there was a space for a concept there. And BDS have done a similar thing with like the walk-ins.
Mm.
For like they've started doing this as of recent years. They record the teams coming into the studio as they come to sit down. But they've started like, there's like a hospital thing and they all come out the back of it and like this is the whole thing or whatever. They just like built concepts into that. And it's really like, that's what you need to do creatively. Like when I see stuff like that, I'm annoyed, but I'm annoyed in a good way because I'm like, oh, you're doing that. And I wanted to do that.
Yeah, we had an interesting culture similar to that in Rocket League where we had walkout kind of creativity.
Yeah.
And it started when we had the Copperbox LAN, RLCS there.
Yeah.
One of our players came out in a car wearing sunglasses and drove the car out and did this whole piece and everyone loved it.
Yeah.
Then we had one of the players was carried in by 4 other North American players. And it was like, oh, North America's carrying him through, all this kind of stuff. And then we had all that kind of, the same kind of thing you were saying. And then it sort of disappeared because it was too risky. You know, there was too much like could go wrong. You know, people didn't want to, you know, force themselves to do these.
Why?
Yeah. I mean, it's very true. Like, why is that all kind of going away? And this kind of comes full circle back to one of my other guests, Damascus. He posed a question. Well, I guess he created a question for me, which I now ask a lot of people within esports because I think it's a big problem right now, which is, has esports become soulless?
I don't know. The problem is I don't feel comfortable asking this because I'm sort of quite new, really.
Yeah.
I don't care. Like, without being rude, I don't really care what anyone else does or like how much soul they put into it, because for me, art is finality. To make things is my direction. It's all I'll ever do. That's what I'm resolved to that. Like, so for me, I'll always attempt to be happy. Like, we've already turned down like we've not had, I mean, I'm not going to pretend we've had like massive deals. We've got 1400 followers on, like, we've got like a lot of our stuff goes very mega viral, but like we've had offers for money and they've been like, yeah, but we kind of want you to tone down things and be like more brand safe. And I just told them to go do one. Like, and I'm not saying that to be like some, like it be like some personal, like, you know, I'm one of you guys. I'm not trying to do like a, what's that Al Pacino movie where he's Dog Day Afternoon or whatever, that film where he's robbing a bank and everyone thinks he's like a public hero, but he's not. I'm not trying to be some like esports anti-hero where I'm like, yeah, I'm going to turn down the money and do this for the thing or whatever. But it's just like, I do it for me. Like, stuff I make, the stuff we make, the boundaries we push, we do it to entertain ourselves. And because there's a very set, very like moral basis for like why I want to make art and the type of art I want to make. So, but to answer your question, like my personal stake in that doesn't matter because I don't really care. But I think a lot of people are, I mean, I don't know, it's the direction that I think the state of the industry right now is like the bubble has just popped and everyone's panicking. You've kind of got this scenario, like it's like the initial Wall Street crash, like not the 2008 one. Shout out to you guys who have the subprime mortgages or whatever. We're talking about the OG one. Mm. But yeah, like what you, the whole thing with like speculation or whatever is it builds. And then the bubble pops, everyone pulls out, so it looks even worse than it does. And then like everyone panics, and then like the people panicking makes other people panicking. That's what's happening in esports right now, because for a long time we pretended that everything was really sustainable. Mm. And like everyone, like a company would be like, yeah, I'll chuck you 400 grand to make like 5 videos. Mm. That's chill. Like, why not? Just like, we'll get the money back by you like saying our names. And they've slowly realized that that's just not a thing at all. Mm. And that money just gets sunk into absolutely nothing. And there's only really one viable model of making money in esports, which is like actually developing fans that will invest back into your brand, which is like via, you know, you see a lot of like K Corp does a really good job of this, like with the ultras. Mm. You normally, like, I don't know, esports, it's weird. Like successful esports models is like a religion. You have like a head of the state and the church,
mm-hmm.
like what Kameto is for K Corp, what Ibai is for Koi. Like that's what it is. It has to be a religious fanaticism thing.
Mm.
Like that's weird, right? But like,
because people don't invest in companies very well.
They invest in a feeling.
Yeah.
Really. That sounds like very Wolf of Wall Street, but like it's true.
Mm.
I don't like, if you're a fan of a team, you're not a fan because like the initial interest comes from like, oh, you have this player, like you're strong. I like the way you play XYZ, but it's compounded and built on like, I shared this moment with you. Like it's like a lot of like Fnatic was really saved recently by that whole like San Paolo thing with the VCT or whatever.
Yeah, the Valorant team saved them a lot.
They like won and it was like really clutch, and I'm sure that a lot of Fnatic fans had their faith like quote unquote restored, not restored, but like built up again because there's been some cracks.
And they've got the personality through Boaster there.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like that's all now an experience that they'll show. It's like it's like, you know, when you talk to like Liverpool fans and they're like, oh, you wouldn't get it, that one night in Istanbul, like you had to be there. Like that's what esports has to be, but it's infancy, right?
Mm.
Those moments where it's like you're a DRX fan from Korea maybe and you stayed up all night to watch that then win that when they never should have won that, and you invested in the storyline, or you invested in the storyline later. Like, but people, I don't know, that's what you, that those are the moments you have to create. And you create that not only just by like competition, it's like the IRL connections, just like stuff like this. Like it's just like you need to make fans.
Yeah, and right now you guys are making a lot of fans through your pranks and Maverick content and your interviews as well. We spoke a bit about those interviews.
Yeah.
I met you before you did a lot of those interviews, and I had no idea what your plans were, where you were going to go with them. But you went in, and you had a game plan to try and break the mold of interviews. As you've mentioned a few times, you try and do things your own way, you do it differently. What was the game plan going into MSI for your interviews?
I think just generally speaking with everything that I do, like one of the things in regards to creativity, like one of the most important quotes I ever heard was like, it's from the Grand Budapest Hotel. I think the intro to that film where he talks, it's probably from something else. So I feel like very basic for saying that that's where I got like a foundation from. I do like that film and I love Wes Anderson. But one of the things he says is one of the characters in it, I think it's Adrian Brody's character that says it. And he's like, the best writers aren't very like superbly creative. They're just good at listening and being in the right place. So I realized that that's just like really, like no one really reinvents the wheel. Mm. It's just about being available and like listening and understanding. So going into MSI, my whole thing was like, we're not going to reinvent the wheel. Like I took a lot of inspiration from I like a lot of interview content. Like I like one of my biggest inspirations, like my biggest like idol is Christopher Morris, the guy that directed Four Lions. He did a lot of shows like The Day Today, Brass Eye, like probably like the greatest satirist that the UK has ever seen, along with like people like, you know, I won't name names, but like Christopher Morris, that great guy. So I learned a lot from him in terms of like, it's hard to explain his style. You kind of have to see it to get it. And then like beyond that, like Nardwuar is a comparison we've drawn a lot because that's like ostensibly a lot more visible. Like for me, the whole game plan was like, esports players must hate doing media because it looks like the most boring thing. I think there are a lot of people that are really good that I like Yinsu and Frankie are both people that like commended me on what I was doing at MSI. I think what they do is great because it works for them, right? But like, I think they bring something interesting to it. But a majority of the time when I look at like these players, and I think even those two are like forced within the confines of what they do from a broadcast perspective to do stuff that I think is boring, because it's like, how did the game go? How did you prep for this? Yada, yada, yada. If I'm a pro player, like that's the last thing I want you to be talking to me about. Like I don't, it's like good for the fans. And like you have players that are primed to it, like depending on their personality type or like how far into their career they are, that will be like willing to work with you to create a moment like that. But you can see like in a lot of players, it's like they're just there to answer a few questions and go back to the hotel. Like, so my number one thing was like with the Nardwuar thing, and then like a few other, like I like Philomena Kunk as well. That like ridiculousness. I like Eric Andre, stuff like this. I was just like, I need to create a perfect blend here where like part of the gimmick sometimes, if I can get the information, is doing this deep dive research on them where I'm like asking them regular questions and suddenly like, oh, but your mum's like does this, right? And like you went to this school in this random little Czech village, like, and they're just like, hang on, what? Like, and you have this like the immediate barrier of like, I don't want to be doing this is broken. And then they're immediately, it's more like they're talking to a friend. And then from that point onwards, we're actually able to have good conversations because that barrier is broken.
And you still managed to integrate in some League of Legends chat, stuff related to the the tournament, how it's going. You had a little bit of controversy around the Reddit, around the way the Reddit didn't like your interviews. What was the reason for that?
I don't know if they didn't like them. I just think they're just complete, you know, dog's bodies. They're just complete, you know. They suffer from, I mean, some people would call it Napoleon syndrome. Some people would call it domain theory. You know, like how, you know, if I was bullied at school, but I ended up being like decent build, I would maybe become like a bouncer or something because then I can like tell people what they can and can't do. That's like Reddit mods, but like they never really achieved anything. They're just kind of syphilitic scabs on the bell end of mankind.
That's one way to put it. I was going to call them militant.
Very militant. But I mean, they basically decided that like there's a weird thing where like you would think the League of Legends subreddit should just be like servants of the parent company of the title, which they are. Like you're job is to like spread news and like keep the lifeblood of the community gone because you're in effectively a hand of that. That's why they work so closely with Riot, which is like clear evidence for like it's a close connection between those two. But they were just taking my interviews down because it like wasn't relevant League of Legends content, which is like basically their argument was the fact that it's at a League of Legends event and talking to a League of Legends player isn't enough to justify the context. You also have to talk about League of Legends for enough time.
And the enough time thing, that's the it's not got
well, there's no
set rules.
There's no public thing for that, so it's just open for interpretation.
Yeah.
So what ended up being the case is they took down one of them. That sparked a controversy. I ended up gaining more from that. I'm like openly like, good job, guys. Like, thank you for giving me everything I could have possibly wanted, because although I think our videos would have popped harder, it gave me more like respect for people that like directly helped me to like get involved. Like,
yeah, because you had Medic come and help you.
Yeah, Medic came in and like became this whole like, for me, that became like a zeitgeist kind of moment because we made an interview that was like a League of Legends event about League of Legends. And we were able to basically just like through double speak, just insult them directly and then put that up on the subreddit. And then we were locked into this very interesting thing, which I loved. It was almost an orgasmic affair of choices from a Machiavellian perspective, because we put this interview up that was basically a League of Legends event about League of Legends. The whole video is about League. And I put them in a position whereby if you allow me to keep this video up, which under your own rules, it should be allowed to stay on the subreddit, then you allow me to lambast in your kingdom the uncertain ruley of admonishment. And it's just a wonderful thing for me to allow. You basically, by your own rules, like have to succumb to your own moral restrictions that you've directed previously. Or you remove it and you reveal the true hypocrisy and draconianism of your untimely and non-logical sequitur ways. So it's just a win-win situation. Did they take it down? Yeah. I can confidently say Donjake won League of Legends subreddits zero. Like, I completely beat them. Like, a whole there's like how many people in that subreddit? Like, I'm not going to count the people that the audience isn't the problem, it's the moderators.
Mm.
But you guys, you command maybe a 500 times like power structure than I do, and I completely just schooled you, to be honest.
I got to ask you one more before we move on to your top five games. I got to ask you quickly about the recent coach prank where you filmed your coach having a go at your team.
It's Regan, by the way.
Regan.
Cohen, yeah.
Yeah.
So, don't know if you met him.
I don't know if I met him, no. But Regan went off on the team.
Yeah.
And then consequently went viral because it was, let's be real, you would never want anyone to talk to your players like that.
Yeah.
That was the whole idea. So what happened there?
Well, so, I mean, the funny thing about that, the most mind-blowing statistic is I think we counted up the impressions from that, and combined with the reaction, that whole event has more impressions than Riot announcing the winner of MSI, which is a crazy, crazy statistic when you think about it.
It was like in the millions of impressions.
3.5 to 4, I would say now. Not a bad day. But yeah, I mean, our idea was basically like, I don't know, like I don't want to ever have to like, I'm not going to go too in depth because I don't like, I have plans. So it's like, I don't want to justify my art too heavily, but like our whole thing is like, just think about what I've talked about in terms of our brand synthesis. Like for us, like we very much like don't like to take ourselves too seriously. And it's almost like a self-ironic referential joke in that we don't think that we belong in esports. So for us, like this was a perfect opportunity to satirize and create satirical content around the fact that there is a lot of, I think esports is made up by non-specialists, emotional man children that are former players that have ended up being in high ranking corporate positions that think it's okay to act in that way. So that was a direct referential work to that. Mm. I think it was a bit more obvious than some people would have. I think not as many people should have fallen for it because he literally in the video says, you guys need to eat fruit, go to the gym. And then it says, whose idea was Master Yi? And then after that, there's just so many quotables in that video that are just, you would think it'd be a bit more obvious. But yeah, I mean, the general idea of it is just we were creating a satirical commentary.
It's obvious if you know Radicorp, but I guess it blew up beyond the point of...
Oh no, 100%. Like Radicorp. Not many people know Radicorp, right? So yeah. It's not really a risk. We didn't really think there was any risk like whatsoever. Like there's always going to be detractors to it. I mean, there's a lot of commentary around it, like to do with mental health stuff or whatever, which... you know, I can completely understand. And whilst I don't massively agree with it, because I think it's important to, I think a lot of people will jump to the thing of like, oh, if you satirize this, then it means that less people will take this seriously. But I don't hold that opinion at all. I think it's important to satirize to expose the absurdity of things. And I think if you realize from that perspective that there's no malicious intent going into it, it was purely a satirical attempt. It's not to belittle or demean. These are things that go on. And that's why things or whatever. I think we could have handled the, but basically what I wanted to... Actually, I'm not going to reveal what I wanted to do because it ties into further plans.
Okay, we'll leave it there. We'll take a little break from your story because we've had some deep dives into the mindset behind you guys and your journey. And as you mentioned, you're quite young, quite new to the esports world, but you've mentioned Decent-ish. Two games, Minecraft and League of Legends. So I'm wondering what your top five games are.
I wish you'd asked me this like before I came in, because I know you do this, but like I would have actually prepared a list. Uh-huh. So my favorite game, I don't know if it's my favorite game to play, but like the game that shaped me, and a lot of people like, I want to say games that people in the comments are like, yeah, this guy has said so much a better answer than everyone else. I hope no one said this. Kingdom Hearts, the original
we've had a Kingdom Hearts, right?
In a Kingdom Hearts, I'm annoyed about that. But like, I'll explain to you why. The opening to Kingdom Hearts, like the whole sequence, like that is a work of art that changed me. Like you talk about things that like reset the timeline, altered my brain chemistry. The opening to that, where it's like, I think it's a Sanctuary by Utada Hikaru. It's like this whole thing. He's like walking up these like stairs that like are just floating. It's like this whole thing. It's like set to this really dramatic like song. That shit is wonderful, man. It's a good game as well. Like old school PlayStation 2, that's probably the first console I had. Yeah, that's a wicked, wicked, wicked game. Like for me, like all of those games, they don't make any sense because for some reason, a lot of Japanese game makers just love not having their games make any sense from a narrative perspective. Final Fantasy Final Fantasy 7's up there for me as well, but that's another game that makes absolutely no sense whatsoever.
But they look great.
No, they look amazing. Like the vibes is there, right? Like sometimes it's like with music. Like a lot of the time, like my music taste is pretty eclectic. Like a lot of like I like a lot of your traditional stuff, Like, anyone who watches Anthony Fantano would love me. Like, you know, any alt girls out there, take me home to meet your parents. They'd love me as well. But, like, I also like stuff that, like, Playboi Carti and stuff like that. It's like, it sounds like it shouldn't be good, but it's, like, the melody of it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, for me, like, Final Fantasy VII, Kingdom Hearts, they're up there for sure. I need to think of some others. Like, what was my trajectory in terms of games? First thing I had was the PlayStation.
Mm-hmm.
Kingdom Hearts was my favorite thing on that. Shrek 2, the game, is a are you serious, dude? You ever played that?
No.
What? That is a... I'm being serious. That is a serious...
I'm glad you said I'm being serious because I wasn't sure.
No, that is a serious heavyweight of the movie game genre.
Okay.
Movie games are terrible a lot of the time.
Yeah.
They're just gimmicks. That is a good, good game. Really. Really and truly. All the other ones are terrible. I think the Shrek 3 one's really bad. I don't know if there's any other ones.
A regular Shrek gamer.
That is a good, good game. Seriously, there's a lot of... If anyone's out there has played that, they will vouch 100%. Jack, the Jack series. I liked growing up, but it always annoyed me that he was called Jack because my name was Jake. And it was just like, he spelled it J-A-K. It was just weird. Just add the E in, mate. Come mm-hmm. on, go the extra mile. Simpsons.
So is that your top
Simpsons Hit and Run?
That is a great game. I can agree
with
you on
that.
That's
a good game.
What a game. Simpsons Hit and Run, I think, would be one of those games which I think a lot of people forget about, and in the moment you mention it, they'll be like, oh yes.
Yeah, 100%.
Memories.
I'm not gonna do it. I'm just gonna break the rule. I'll do a top five right now, but I'm just cycling through like what is that? Crusader Kings 2, have you ever played that? It's a strategy game online. It's like one of those the company that makes Stellaris, stuff like that. Strategy game, that is a wonderful, wonderful game with all the DLC included. There's a Game of Thrones mod as well. Wicked, wicked stuff.
I'm gonna push you for a top five. Just give me a top five.
Cool. Kingdom Hearts 2.
Easy.
And then like the order that I said that in. So the editor can go through and like just do the top five based on the last four that I said because I can't remember.
Surprised Minecraft League of Legends didn't make it in.
No, they're terrible games.
But they shaped you in some way, not necessarily the right way.
In a bad way. Like, League of Legends was an absolute vice on me and prevented me from continuing my education, continuing my romantic relationships, my friendships, and my creative lifeblood. I'm lucky that I've broken out of that now. But, yeah, it's a good game, but it's a problem with games like that. It's not a good game to play with people. But, unfortunately, you have to play with people. Minecraft as well is up there in terms of, like, my developmental process. I wouldn't say it's one of my favorite games, but, like, it's up there for sure in terms of games that shaped me.
Well, some interesting games in there. Definitely Shrek 2. I'll be interested to hear what people have
Shrek
to say about
2
that.
It's a game. It's a real game. It really is.
But we'll go back a little bit to your journey. So I think it's been pretty clear with your whole discussion. You're quite a deep thinker, quite an intellectual man. But you're also, you've got some different ways of thinking about things, which has led you to be a maverick within your content. What has that led for you in terms of the way people perceive you online? Has that ever affected you?
I mean, I'm just a silly little guy, really. Does his own thing.
Like, but do people look at you as a silly little guy?
No, 100%. I feel like, I don't know, it's weird. Like, a lot of the time I find that people will speak to me and then either, like, they don't admit this, but I can tell it, or, like, they directly say it. They'll be like, oh, you're, like, actually, you have a brain. I thought you were, like, completely stupid.
Mm-hmm.
That's quite funny. Like, that happens with a lot of people. I think Jamada, that even happened with a few other people that I speak to, like, were, like, not expected. Because, like, I put it on, like, heavily, like, to begin with. Like, a lot of different modes. Like, if I go the full, like, trying to, like, sound like where I'm from and talk like that, people, like, immediately, because of, like, classism, will assume, like, you're stupid because of the way you talk or whatever. But like, I don't know, like, I think a lot of people assume that I don't put thought into what I do and I'm just sort of waiting to see what happens. Like,
I mean, we met on quite I don't want to say an intellectual level, but we spent a long train ride back from Insomnia together.
Yeah.
Where we had a long chat about esports and, you know, spoke about all sorts of deeper sides of it, like our understandings of things. So I instantly knew you were quite a smart guy. And then when I saw your interviews, I was like, oh, this is creative, pretending to be stupid kind of style.
Yeah, I mean, I like to blur the lines, right? Like, I don't really, because it's like, ultimately for me, like, I don't know. Like, for me, like, as a person, like, I'm self-aware enough to know that there is a deep intrinsic arrogance that comes with wanting to believe that you're good at what you do. And I believe that I'm very creative. I believe that I'm very talented. And that has to come with an inherent bias, right? Like, it has to come from a kind of a, to believe that you can be the best at what you do and change things. Like, for me, I believe that I can be the best.
Mm-hmm.
That has to come from an element of delusion and narcissism, right? So for me, it's like, keeping that in check by just being very vulnerable and aware of it and like not shying away from it. Like publicly, I'm just very like in regards to like mental health and like the way that I project myself, I don't try and like cordon off sections of myself. I'm just like very unapologetically attempt to be myself. And like, I'm aware that like, that's a problem sometimes because, you know, there's a degree of intensity to everything that I do. Mm-hmm. So I guess to answer your question. Yeah.
Yeah. I guess, you said about the mental health side.
Yeah.
How's your mental health been?
So I'm like a very like mental person. Like I'm a hyper neurotic overthinker. The way that my brain works is very strange because I'm completely aphantic. Like I have aphantasia. I don't low level visualization. Mm. Like I don't visualize anything. So I don't see images in my head, which people are always very weirded out by because a lot of what I do is very visual. Like it's a visual medium that I communicate. And creativity normally comes from like you need to see the idea. I don't like a lot of my thing is just pure thought. I also don't have an internal dialogue. Okay. I'm like one of the rare people. I don't know what the percentage of that is made up of, but like I don't hear thoughts in my head. There's not a back and forth conversation.
Interesting.
It's completely blank. And beyond that, like in regards to like mental health, like I don't know. I'm just like a very like so I have bipolar, recently diagnosed.
Recently.
Spent like a long time of my life not understanding what that was. So that's been an interesting thing because I've realized that a lot of what I do is characterized by mania, like the intensity and the obsession, the obsessive nature of everything I do. I only started to really think about like that could be a possibility after like a lot of like, I know it's like mega controversial now, but the period of which I thought this was when Kanye West released the Ye album, when he had a lot of discourse publicly about how bipolar was a superpower for him, how it enabled a lot of his creative drive. And I started to realize there was a lot of similarities, and that's not like an arrogant comment, like I'd think I'm Kanye West, but like similarities in approach in regards to how he described his creative process, how it was like born from a lot of mania and intensity, and how like the storm is what created that. For me, that's like a lot of things, like in my personal life, like getting this, like realizing what's wrong with me has made me realize a lot of like, I don't know, it's been a real bombshell because I was like, I've always realized I'm troubled because I was a very troubled childhood and I've gone through a lot of shit like mentally, but like I'm happy for it in a way. That's the weird thing for me. I have like, I think a lot of people have this perspective, but for me, when it in regards to like traumatic things that have happened and have shaped me, I'm in a weird way happy for all of it because I wouldn't be the person I am now. And I don't think I would be able to make the art I can. With like, not even in regards to like stuff I do in esports, like a lot of like personal projects and like where I want to go because I want to go into like making films and stuff like this. And like I write a lot of poetry. I've always written, like I've been a writer myself. A lot of what I do, like I feel like it wouldn't reach the authenticity or the levels that it does if I hadn't gone through that. So I guess in regards to mental health, like realizing the position I'm in now, it's like just like weirdly freeing because...
Yeah, do you think the diagnosis has increase that superpower as you described it, or do you reckon it's made it?
It keeps it in check and it allows me to just be like, I'm just trying to unapologetically be myself. Like before it was weird because it's like, I don't know, like being in, so the way that I came through, like the years I spent where I was like, oh, this is but good, like from the age of like 17, 18 to like maybe 21, like there was a long time where like I went to uni, like dropped out, had a full mental breakdown, like, and just spent a lot of time like online in like very bad communities. Like the problem with like League of Legends especially is like a lot of the time, like based on the people you speak to, that we have this whole thing, like no one will know what I'm talking about if you don't play League, but like L9 is a community. So it's like, it was like this like club of people that like were hyper toxic on the US server, and they've like become like almost in this like cynic, docal joker way, they've come to represent a wider construct that people adhere to and like worship. That's like an idol worship for being a bad person. And like I got like really sucked into that. Like I went through this whole rabbit hole of like a couple of years of like being very disenfranchised, depressed, where like I'm not like ashamed to admit it. Like it's something I want to talk about. So it's actually weird that I'm talking about it now. It's like feels like a good time. But like I had this weird time, and I one of the things I want to do, and like in being unapologetic and like kind of being just transparent, is like had this like very weird period of time where like because I was so depressed, you just get dragged into this like rabbit hole of like I started watching on YouTube like this whole like Jordan Peterson stuff, like conventional wisdom, men's rights activism, like Andrew, like what you would consider now like the Andrew Tate pipeline, right? And you start like going into this like I wouldn't say I ever quite committed to the political ideology, because I think my upbringing and like general moral constraints like prevented me from fully going towards it. But I was definitely more akin to like hearing these kind of, because what those things do is they build up like a, it comes from a victimhood. It's like, you are a victim. You need to change that. Exercise personal autonomy by blaming other people in a way. Like, conventional wisdom is a real sin in that way. I think it's one of the most dangerous things that men, young men face today. So I ended up being in a position where I was like just believing all this stuff, like feeding my brain with all this like complete demagogue ideological bullshit. And then also exercised like my personal space, like the people I like completely detached from my friends that played League, and like they all got rid of me because I was just being a massive dickhead, like just by the way that I was acting and like how depressed I was and the person I was becoming. I was just becoming just a ball of self-pity and rage that exacted on other people. And the people I started hanging out with were all these like just people in similar positions, but like just had all these like this negative energy to put out there. And the person I became very quickly just like was just performative, because these communities thrive on the more toxic and horrible of a person you are, the more you're rewarded for that. It's a social structure that rewards delving deeper and deeper into the abysses and pits of abscesses of human constraints and despair. So I ended up being in a position where like I was just very unhappy with the person I became, and I'm like very thankful to be in a position I am now, where it's like, I think the thing that stopped that is I like got a reality check, but like I randomly bumped into people that were like in the industry for esports, and I was like the creative Jake, the Jake that was like passionate and like had an intensity but was kind with what he did. Like it was kind of like I was like met him again to an extent. And like I was able to, I feel like now with my mental illness, I'm able to use that in a way that can't be, isn't great sometimes. Like sometimes I have flip outs and I have bouts of mania where like I'm not great to the people around me. And that's something I have to be self-aware of and accountable for, right? But it also like, I feel like more often than not now I can use that for a creative drive. Whereas before it was just being used to, almost like, I feel like a lot of the time it was used to like punish myself for the idea that anyone else could help me.
It's interesting you brought that up, because I think that's a big problem the internet has created, where it's brought people together who are struggling in similar ways.
And the problem is, like, for what, one of the things that I want to do for Ruddy, so I don't mind announcing this, but like I want to say that this is something that we've had planned, and like we set it up like with the whole like process. I don't know how to describe the process, because I got Harry to do all of that. Anything business wise, I get him to do it. But like I really wanted for a while to set up a mental health charity, but like I'm waiting to like see what to do with it, because I feel like if you do it now, it's like a lot of people will just be like, oh, you're just doing this as a cop-out to criticism you had from the most recent thing or whatever, which is not
find the right timing for
I it. Also like don't give weight to a lot of those criticisms, because I think if I was to offer my perspective, people would understand why I don't necessarily agree with that. But like one of the things that I want to do is with Ruddy is like to an extent of like although we're jokers and we satirize and like there's a distinct alternative reality that's being offered by committal to a fake reality, or like almost in like a WWE way, right? I do, as someone that like was one of those young disenfranchised males that like fell victim to this kind of rabbit hole, I want to kind of, because I was always like, I've always had the ability to do what I do now, but it's just like anyone can befall circumstances. Like for me, it was like very personal family circumstances that like dragged me into going down the wrong path, so to speak. And I feel like there's a lot of people like in online games, because of the nature of like how online things can be, how isolated you can be. I mean, like you think about like, I think what that someone I know is making a documentary about it. I don't know if it's in Japan or Korea, but there's this whole epidemic of people that just don't leave their house. Like it's a major epidemic in a lot of countries, where like people, just because you can order your food online, you do groceries online, everything, you don't need to ever leave your room.
Yeah.
And I felt like that was me. Like there was probably like a good year and a half, 2 years, where like I maybe left my house once a month, once every 2 months, which is crazy to admit now. It's a daunting thing, but like I'm okay with being unabashedly not unashamed, because I'm ashamed of it, do you know what I mean, but like unabashedly able to like share that experience, because it's like I feel like there are a lot of, there's probably like maybe not people watching this, but there's people out there for sure that I've come into contact with that like, there's a good example, like I won't name him, but like there's someone I know that like I was in similar environments with that like has come out, and he does like a lot of like stuff in the industry now. And it's like funny, like I've talked to him about it. It's like, wow, like we were really just being toxic online assholes.
And it's all extremes right now, isn't it? It's the same thing could be said of the extreme woke thing that's happening as well. Yeah. That's the same idea. You're connecting with people with an extreme view, and the same thing with the extreme masculine figures like you mentioned, like Andrew Tate, that's created that side of it, and now and people are going off the incel community of finding their people.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing with Andrew Tate is that people think it's a new thing, right? Like, it's not really. Like, it's a thing that's existed since, like, it's a phenomenon that's existed throughout history because conventional wisdom. But the problem with the internet is you have a lot of ideologue merchants that can peddle their ideas via social media and virality. Like, the whole thing people don't realize is, like, the idea of, like, the self-help thing, like in the 90s, was like, buy this exercise bike and buy this book and, like, come to my lectures, sign up for my 12-step program. Now it's like, hey, buddy, you're watching my YouTube content? I've got this seminar class for young men that, like, I can help you be, like, a boss-ass pimp like I am, you know? And that's the problem. You have, like, a lot of very young, impressionable people that can end up going down that line of thing. And it's, like, easier because it's, like, it's so much more, like, easy to cover up what you're really doing. Like, and what you're really doing is you're selling an idea. Like,
yeah. And with all of these things, there is wisdom within the crazy ideology, which then...
No, there's some things to agree with. Like, it's like, for example, like, when you talk about Andrew Tate, like, it's like the most annoying take about him is, like, what I always hear. It's like, well, yeah, but I agree with some of his stuff. Yeah, that's the point. He wants you to agree with some of the stuff. That's the whole rabbit hole, like, with all of these guys. It's like, even... I don't want to compare Jordan Peterson because I think Jordan Peterson, like, on a psychological level, like, he should just stick to what he knows because, like, when it comes to his Jungian stuff, like, he's knowledgeable, but it's just the problem when he goes into, like, the social stuff that is the issue. But the idea is, like, baseline principles that are, like, easy to agree with, like, man should, you know, take care of your body, like, your body's a temple, like, be proud to be who you are, like, stuff like this, baseline, like, things that, like, should be celebrated. But then you, like, attack the angle of, like, oh, but these things are admonished in society. Like, to be masculine is frowned upon. I don't think anyone's frowning on anyone going to the gym and taking care of themselves. Like, there are maybe arguments you can make for society moving in a point where it's ironic me saying this is a little fatty on camera, but, like, where you can be like, oh, like, maybe body positivity is arguably, like, pushed in a direction that is, although inclusive, could be harmful to people. Like, that could be a nuanced take that you could have. But, like, the problem is people are just like, look at this thing that I'm trying to push you. Let me explain to you via society without having a nuanced view of it why that's persecuted. Oh, you believe in the same things as me? Guess what? You're also persecuted in the same way that I am. Welcome to the team. Come over to the club. Yeah. You know, pull you over to the other side. That's
there's
the whole thing.
There's, I mean, we are going over a bit, but this is a very interesting debate. So I do want to just finish it off a bit here. But what you mentioned there, I think was a key, was nuance, is being able to look at things and take the bits you agree with and disagree with stuff. And there's a lot of vulnerable people who ignore the nuance and just take everything as it is, and sometimes take it to the extreme and push it even further. Take what they say and turn it into an even more extreme view, or take stuff out of context with shorts and things like that, right? But anyway, we have gone over a little bit. I'd love to keep chatting to you.
No worries.
Because you're a very interesting man in the way your brain thinks. You think about things with a lot more depth than the average person, I think, and that's where the creativity you've described throughout the podcast has come from. And consequently, you are doing something very different in this space. And I'll be interested to follow yours and Ruddy Corp's journey.
Yeah.
And maybe in a year's time, we can bring you back and we can talk about how all that has turned into amazing success. Because being different is something that's lacking right now in esports, as people are just following the mold and not necessarily growing because of it. So the last question we ask everyone, and I'd be interested to hear what your take is on this, is what does gaming mean to you?
What does gaming mean to me? God. What's the best answer you've had on this?
We've had a lot of everything, so then people describing all the different things it's done for them. We've had some people talk about social...
What's like the answer you heard that you were like, wow, that's interesting?
I think probably the, it's tough because a lot of people do just give very personal reasons, which I probably would have been a guess before. In fact, one person, I told them what their answer was and they went, yeah, that's about right. Because they couldn't come out with their answer.
Yeah.
But for a lot of people, it is just everything. It's their social life. It's their relationships. It's their job. It's their escape.
I would say gaming for me, in the pursuit of realizing that creativity is an interdisciplinary thing, is one aspect and facet that I can draw upon for me in terms of like putting out my energy. Like for me, number one development for me as a creative was realizing that you get your creativity from everything, right? Like, I remember reading Freakonomics when I was like 15. I don't know if you've ever read that book.
I haven't, no.
It's like a book by Stephen something and something Dubner is someone's surname on that. But it talks about economic concepts from like a literary perspective. So it'll be like, we named one kid winner, one named loser. Here's the nominative determinism of how their lives went. Or like, what similarities do the Wall Street brokers have with crack dealers in Detroit? And I realized, like, I don't really care about economics, but that's interesting because it uses economic concepts. And then I realized, wow, you can actually be interested in anything because there's something that you can... It's the thing I talked about at the beginning. We're bringing it full circle here because, like, you build references and you build it into other things, right? And that's what people need to realize. Like, for me, that's what gaming is.
Being able to... your many references to be creative.
Yeah. It's just, like, build from it, you know? Like, a lot of things I've seen in gaming are influences. Like, that Kingdom Hearts opening sequence. Go and watch that. It's, like, amazing.
Wow.
The 2.8 one as well is really good. They did like a little remix of it that came out like a few years ago. It's really good.
Well, you are the only one who's ever said that about gaming, so you are unique again. Once again, you like being unique.
I tried, you know.
Well, thank you very much.
No worries. Sports Social Podcast Network.